What will more in-person learning opportunities mean for students and teachers in the Las Cruces Public School District? Today, Superintendent Dr. Karen Trujillo joins us for Voice of the Public.
We're not in a hybrid model. We're not compelling anybody to go into the building. We're not doing like the changing of classes, and all students are there 2 days a week. It's kind of like transitioning into hybrid, then to full.
I think I was willing to go this direction to experiment with the reopening as long as it wasn't too big where we would have bigger mistakes. Even when we start small with such a big district, it still has a significant impact.
We'll begin right after NPR News. Call with your questions 575-646-2212 for Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. Good afternoon. It is 1:06 and time for Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. This is Casey Counts. Thank you for joining us this afternoon on 90.7 FM or any of our other signals, our translators around the southern portion of the state, or streaming online at krwg.org. You might be following along on Facebook as well, and we are happy to take your comments and questions on our Facebook page. Just look for KRWG if you're not already linked with us on Facebook. And you can call with your questions for Las Cruces Public Schools Superintendent Dr. Karen Trujillo at 575-646-2212. Let's get started. Dr. Trujillo, welcome back to KRWG's Voice of the Public.
Hi, how are you doing this afternoon?
Well, doing great myself, and we'd like to thank you for taking the time to join us. It was a few months ago that you were here with us trying to figure out where the district was going to go as we headed into a new school year. And now that we are just about a year into this pandemic, it has certainly taken its toll on Las Cruces Public Schools, on the staff, the family that is the district, the family of educators and staff. And I'd like to start just by giving you an opportunity to talk a little bit about that in terms of the losses that the district has suffered so far.
Thank you very much for starting with that. I think that's something that we have to recognize, and it's not just the loss of classroom time or the loss to our families and our students, but you know, we've lost multiple staff members starting in November, and it just, you know, the virus isn't gone and we can't let our guard down. And when we look at the impact that all of the educators, teachers, substitutes, educational assistants that we've lost in the past few months, it's devastating, because each of them has touched hundreds, if not thousands, of lives, both with their colleagues, but also with students. You know, people who have had extensive 10, 15, 20-year careers have taught hundreds, if not thousands, of students over time, and it just makes it very, brings it back home, and you know, as hopeful as we are looking forward, we really do have to recognize that there are many, many pieces to the puzzle that we have to take into consideration.
And so
I appreciate you recognizing that.
Of course. And so give us a look at what, where the district is beginning with more in-person learning opportunities starting Monday.
So, thankfully, I just first of all want to thank the school board for making a decision on the 2nd of February. I know we had a full hybrid proposal that they did not approve, which is fine, but they did allow the administration to come up with a plan. And because they did that, we really were able to spend the last, you know, 2.5 weeks coming together and saying, okay, with the parameters that we have, with the guidelines from the Public Education Department, the guidelines from the school board, the guidelines from the Activities Association, what can we do? And how can we, you know, kind of build a first draft, for lack of a better word, or that first phase with the ability to increase as we move forward. So we were able to do that. We have some high school students that will be starting on February 22nd, which is Monday. And so we're super excited about that opportunity. And then on March 1st, middle school and elementary students will start returning to school buildings. And not all of them, obviously. It's going to be probably close to 2,000, 2,500 students total, which is a small fraction of our 24,000. But it's a start. And I think that's what we're looking forward to, so that we can get our protocols down tight. And as we do that and we have more staff available, then we can continue to increase as long as things stay safe.
Well, let's talk about staff availability. I know the rush was on to get as many mm-hmm. teachers and staff members vaccinated as possible. Can you give us a look at how the progress has been in that area?
So we've been very fortunate, much more fortunate than other districts across the state. I think that's a testament to our partnerships here in Doniana County and the way that we work together with our public partners, our hospital partners, so Mountain View Regional Medical Center and Memorial Medical Center. When 1B was first released and educators were part of that 1B category, you know, I reached out to Mountain View and I said, hey, you know, whenever you're ready to work with educators, when we're eligible, we're happy to do a partnership. And so once that happened, you know, they reached back out. We started collecting names of folks in our ranks that wanted to get vaccinated. It was about 56% of the people who responded that yes, they wanted to have that opportunity. We were able to work with Mountain View and Memorial to start setting up kind of vaccination clinics, sent out appointment times, got all of that work started. And so we had done that probably 10 days before the announcement that teachers and school staff were no longer going to be part of that 1B category. We had already done a lot of that work, which was amazing. And then after that, we realized that there's still a lot of folks in our ranks that did have the underlying conditions, so they still did qualify under that. So of those, we were about to, we got about 82% of those who requested. 1,911 of our employees were able to receive the vaccination. And this week, by today, in fact, everybody will have received their second dose.
Wow.
Yeah.
So far, you said 56% responded that they wanted the vaccine. Is there a hesitancy on the part of a lot of staff? I mean, we see it in across the board.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's the other piece, that we, you know, at this time have no intention of making the vaccination mandatory. It really is a voluntary, opt-in arrangement. And that's for the foreseeable future. Like, even when we talk with the public education department, they're not encouraging that it becomes a mandatory vaccination. So we're just willing, you know, and as people change their mind or are willing, hopefully once educators and school staff are back in that category, we'll continue our partnerships and get everybody who wants to be vaccinated.
So do you have a picture at this point, Dr. Trujillo, of what percentage or how many of your staff, vaccinated or not, is ready to get back into the classroom and do in-person learning?
So that varies by school and by level. And we actually, when we surveyed our staff, we asked it in two different ways. So those who were willing to start immediately, so, you know, on Monday, or for elementary and middle school to March 1st. And then the second, round of folks coming in are after their second vaccination. So we have, you know, a certain number, and it ranges from about 20 to 40 at each individual high school for this first round. And then for the most part, it doubles after they've received their second vaccination and then plus the 10 days just for full efficacy. Mm-hmm. So we imagine that March 8th is when we'll have many more staff that are available.
Let's talk about those kids that are in the lower grades that you've mentioned as having those opportunities to come back. The ones that are that might be struggling more than others. Tell us about who those kids are and what the challenges are that they're facing.
So I think when we look at those students, obviously we realize that everybody has that need. There's some need. However, there are some that have more than others, more challenges than others. So we really started looking at students, one, who don't have that consistent engagement, aren't able to, you know, come to class on a daily basis because parents are working or they're just not logging on for whatever reason. Second, those students who may be logging on and attending their face-to-face classes, but they're not turning anything in. Or if they are, it's below grade level. So what we're really trying to do is identify students that are showing evidence of learning loss and trying to mitigate that situation so that we don't have numerous retentions for this coming year. So really that's the first round of students that we're really trying to identify, those that need that assistance. The other category, if we must, is those that really just need that social-emotional engagement, that we can see that there's other issues that are taking place that aren't necessarily academic, and targeting those students that really just need that social-emotional support as well.
Over the course of the last year, I mean, it became apparent immediately, probably something you knew going in, that the technology would be a huge challenge across the district and, frankly, all over the area. How, from the start of that effort to today, what kind of progress has the district made, and where would you say families and kids are standing now in terms of technology and access to the internet?
That's a great question. And honestly, if we had to compare where we're at today to where we started a year ago, oh my gosh, I would say that when we started this adventure, the idea of having a one-to-one initiative where every student had a device at every grade level or every student had access to the internet, it was daunting. Let's just put it that way. It was a very daunting thing to consider. Thankfully, we were one of the first districts that started ordering technology in bulk, surveying families individually and asking, you know, who needed the devices, who needed internet access, and partnered with Comcast Cares, the city of Las Cruces, purchased hundreds of hotspots to send out to students. So anybody who indicated that they had that need, we went far and above to really try and meet those needs. We're continuing to purchase additional computers. In fact, we're in the process of ordering like another 4,000 student computers because we know that when students do come back in the building, that online access, the need for that online access isn't going to go away. Online learning is going to be a fact of life for the foreseeable future, and it's vital. So I think we've done a really good job, in fact, of meeting those technology needs. And I would encourage anybody who still needs that, just please let us know. Like we have availability, we have partnerships, and we're doing our very best to meet the technological needs of all of our students.
Las Cruces Public Schools Superintendent Dr. Karen Trujillo, our guest this afternoon on Voice of the Public on KRWG. It is 119. And if you have a question for Dr. Trujillo, call now 575-646-2212. That's 646-2212. And you can also follow along on Facebook. We're happy to take your comment there. If you'd rather not call and be on the radio, we certainly understand. Let's go back to when you were speaking just a few minutes ago, Dr. Trujillo, about the guidelines that you were getting from all the different organizations. I was curious as to whether those guidelines seemed to be consistent, and what did they consist of? Were they the same from organization to organization, or were you wading through a lot of different guidelines?
I wish I could say that they were consistent or that they were static. I think the best way to describe the guidelines that we have to work under, they're ever-changing. So even on Monday, we got guidelines that were different than they were last week for, you know, students practicing for sports. We were told initially that they could start full practice on the 22nd as long as we were in school on the 22nd. On Monday, the documentation came out from the public education department that said, nope, they got to be in school for 2 weeks before they can start full practice. I mean, those are huge implications, right? Mm-hmm. And I talked to someone and said, you know, at this point, we just take it when it comes and say, like, okay, well, what's the solution? Let's just figure out the solution. If the ultimate goal is to get students active and in buildings and serve them, then at some point, there's no use fighting anymore. You just kind of say, like, okay, what are the rules? What are we going to do to make it work? And then just figure it out.
How much have you looked outside of this community and even this state to districts in other places that have maybe been doing more in-person learning? What do you take away from the rest of the country?
So I think the biggest piece about what's happening in the rest of the country, there are definitely examples of the hybrid learning, or even in many cases, the full in-person learning working and not showing necessarily that evidence of spread. I think the thing for our community and our state to understand is that New Mexico has some very strict guidelines, probably the strictest in the country, in terms of what we're capable of doing. So even if I said, okay, every teacher, every student, we're coming back on March 1st, that's not an option. Like, at most, the option is the 2 days a week hybrid learning. That's the most we can even offer to a student. And in some cases, that's more disruptive than, you know, when we surveyed our high school students, they're like, I'm good. I'm just going to stay online because why would I disrupt my life any more than it already has been? Mm-hmm. So the guidelines are different from state to state. In Texas, that's true from county to county, and you see the differences. For us as a large school district, you know, for us to get to the point where we were able to increase those opportunities for face-to-face learning with 42 different schools, that's a daunting task. And the only other school district of significant size who's been able to do hybrid learning is Rio Rancho. And so we take models from them. The other thing that I've done in the last couple of weeks, like, I went to Holy Cross and visited and went through each class and talked to students and teachers and saw how they were doing things. And so we know that those things are possible, but people have to understand that as a public school, we have to go by the public school orders because our licenses are on the line. You know, there's guidelines that we have to follow that others don't, and that's okay. So like I said before, we take the rules as they're provided and try and figure out how we can get the most out of what we have to work with.
Certainly a lot of pivots along the way.
Yes, most definitely.
Right.
That's a good word.
We've been using it a lot lately.
Yeah.
All right, at 1:23, let's get to a caller on the line. John is holding with a question. Good afternoon, John. Thanks for calling Voice of the Public.
Hi, good afternoon. I want to first commend Superintendent Trujillo and all of the teachers across the district. This has not been an easy time for anybody really, and I think as a community we've all been working through this. I appreciate Dr. Trujillo mentioning that the playing field is constantly changing, and I think that is very much true. I'm calling, I've got two quick questions. One is, as we work to transition our children, I'm a father of a 13-year-old in one of our local middle schools and a fifth grader. He's going to be transitioning to middle school next year. And they're both working very hard, and it's been challenging as a parent as it has been for the schools and for the teachers. I have a my oldest is an advanced education child. This online stuff has not, it's had its ups and downs. But as a parent, when I reach out to the school and reach out to her teachers and don't get constant, don't get any feedback, send an email and don't get responses, is that something that, that you want to see happening at the schools?
So I'm glad that you mentioned that, and thank you first of all for like reaching out to the teachers. The way that it works, like if you're not getting any response from the teachers themselves, then please reach out to the building administrator. And also in my office, I have like a community liaison. His name is Jaime Calderon. He's probably gonna shoot me for putting his name out there, but that's his role. So Jaime's role at the superintendent's office is to talk with you know parents like yourself and say, hey, I'm having this situation at the school. I've reached out to the teacher. I'm not getting the response that I would like, or the principal. And then he kind of helps to facilitate those conversations, and he's amazing at his work. But I would say if you've reached out to the teacher and haven't received, you know, a suitable response, work with the principal. They might work, you know, might, and some of schools have like an assigned vice principal for each grade level or however that works. But there's always the option to continue to go up the chain. And I talk with Jaime, you know, if not daily, every other day, just about different things that are happening across the district. So if we know, then we can take care of those issues.
Excellent. That's helpful. I just needed a little guidance on how to,
sure.
I don't want to get anybody in trouble during this time.
No, yeah.
My other question, you know, I work in public health, so I've seen this. I've seen COVID and how it's affecting our communities firsthand. As a parent and as a public health professional, I'm extremely concerned about our young people and the lack of face-to-face instruction that they've had and interaction, and especially for our youth that are transitioning, those that my kids are blessed because we're in that socioeconomic middle class that they have broadband, they have computers, they have two parents with jobs and all of this, right? But for those kids that don't, are there any plans for summer school this year or transitional time or when we can get hopefully back together face-to-face? Has the district had any of those conversations, or PED? Have you been involved in any of those conversations? Because I think it's going to be really important for our fifth graders going to sixth graders, you know, going to sixth grade, our eighth graders going to high school.
Yeah. So another great question. And yes, so there's a few different things. One, there's actually a bill or a few bills going through the legislature right now that are looking at expanding extended learning, which is an additional 10 days. Last year we actually applied and we got funded for exactly what you're saying, like bring the sixth graders in for 2 or 3 days and let's do some team building at each of the schools. Same thing for the ninth graders. As a district, we've always done K-5 plus. It will be a little more targeted this year, but K-5 plus, and let's just hope and pray that by July we're able to do full, you know, face-to-face. That's going to be the opportunity right now for those families and students that really need that extra bump, again, to mitigate that learning loss. And then as we move into the school year next year, all of the principals are very cognizant of, and it won't even necessarily just be the incoming sixth graders, because for a lot of the seventh graders next year, they will have also not been in the right building. So they're going to need that reintroduction. And so, yes, we are definitely having those conversations. And if you look at the initial plan, it was focusing on those transitional grades. And I think, you know, a couple weeks ago, someone asked me, well, what are your, you know, just me, myself, as we look at the district, some of those long-term goals. And one of them is really focusing on the on those transitions. So pre-K to kinder, fifth to sixth, eighth to ninth, and then graduation to world, and making sure those students have that support. So yes, we're daily having those conversations, and it looks like there's going to be funding to support that. And I wouldn't be surprised if the legislature in some way, shape, or form extends the school year for this coming year. It looks like it's going to happen, and it would be like a 10-day extension. The nice thing is that those 10 days don't have to be business. I hate to say business as usual, but but it can really be, you know, taking into consideration those transitions, looking at days throughout the year for support. So we're looking at taking full advantage of that.
Excellent. Right. Excellent. No, that's very, very helpful. And again, I think there's, you know, a lot of noise out there and, you know, a lot of, I think there's the negativity always is, what's loud and out there. And I want to send that positive message to you and your entire leadership and our teachers, our frontline teachers who are doing
thank you so much. I
just want to thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It means more than you know.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Good luck to you and your kids as you get back to it. 131-575-646-2212. The telephone number for Voice of the Public on KRWG. We have Las Cruces Public School Superintendent Dr. Karen Trujillo on the line with us talking about the plans for increased in-person learning opportunities that begin on Monday. So when that rolls around, Dr. Trujillo, what will those classrooms look like?
So initially when we were looking at, you know, you think about a hybrid model, and in an elementary school, even from last summer, when we would say the word hybrid, we'd say like, okay, it's two cohorts, splitting by alphabet A through L on Monday and Tuesday, M through Z on Thursday and Friday. And that's assuming that all staff are available and the majority of students are returning to the building. When we realized that that was not necessarily going to be the case, we really had to take a look at what that would look like. At the middle school and high school, you know, the idea of a cohort, but then you have students, 600 freshmen, all of which have different schedules. So how do you go from first period to third period to fifth to seventh on Monday and then second, fourth, sixth, and eighth on Tuesday? If you have one or two cases, it basically takes out hundreds of kids at a time. So the modification that we made based on the staffing that we have available and really to try to mitigate spread more than anything else is really cohorting the high school students and the middle school students similar as the way we would do elementary. So those students report to the building. They're assigned to a teacher or a staff member, and that's their cohort, like for the day. So when they get there in the morning, it's a temperature check. They get breakfast on the go if they want to. They report to their cohort, and they have availability for someone just to help them with academic support. So maybe it's doing homework or, hey, I have some questions about my math or science or social studies or whatever. So that academic support, some social emotional activity time for about an hour. And then at 10, it really does become more of like a learning lounge where students have their computers, headphones, and, you know, like you go to Starbucks or you go wherever and there's multiple people there working online on their own things. So at 10 to 10:45, they would attend their class with their regular online teacher that they've had all year long, and that instruction would happen that way. So that's at 10, and then at 11, lunch from 12 to 1, where they can then socialize, go get a grab and go outside, socially distance, all the fun stuff. And then the last two classes are at 1 and 2. For direct instruction. And then at the end of the day, again, some more of the academic support as needed with their learning coach, for lack of a better word. And so it's not ideal. There's not going to be a lot of switching classes. Really, that assignment with that cohort is pretty, it has to be very strict. but the teachers can go from class to class. So after a couple of weeks, we envision, you know, each cohort having the availability of teachers from different subject areas. So if students need help in different subject areas, they would have access to that staff as needed. So it really is the cohorting right now is what we're focusing on more than anything. And hopefully, you know, again, if numbers bode well, then we can look at a little bit of a different model. But right now, that's what it looks like.
Who does the logistics for all of this?
Everybody's been up all night for weeks trying to figure out the logistics. So that's the other reason for starting small. You know, if you have a small school like, you know, Truth or Consequences that have been in a hybrid model already, you know, they're working in a high school that has 400 students and let's say 250 of them are reporting on a day. We have high schools of 1,600, 1,800, and some schools will have about 250 to 260 students reporting. Others will have close to 600. So that's larger than an entire population for some of the smaller schools across the state. And, you know, we're figuring it out. Like, the fire marshal has gone to every single one of our schools. I have signed documentation that all schools are certified to be safe based on the checklist that we were provided. And so we're very, very, very proud of that. And I can guarantee parents that there will not be any students in the classroom that has not been certified by the fire marshal.
The week before that announcement by the governor, I mean, it didn't come as a total surprise because there was a hint the week before, but were you prepared for that announcement that the governor made at the beginning of February saying, you know, we can go back to in-person learning next week?
No, I don't think anybody was prepared for that. I think we, like you said, there were hints and it said, hey, you know, start preparing. And what we had been advocating for and what I had been advocating for personally and professionally, but through the ranks, was an increased opportunity for small groups. Because at the time, it was really special education, NMAA activities, and then young children, like kinder to third grade, that had that opportunity. Our argument always was there are many students that need to have access to those small group opportunities. So when we were kind of getting those feelers that saying like, hey, get ready for middle school and high school guidance, that's what we were all thinking was going to happen. So when the announcement was made, we were extremely shocked, one. And two, the date of February 8th was not something that anybody had mentioned to any of us, I mean, as school leaders. So the date, I think, was more shocking than the proposed model. And there was just no way, you know, like we, along with most major districts, February 8th was just not possible.
Yeah.
There was just too much to get mobilized in that time. So, you know, we got as fast as we could and here we are. The start date is 2-3 days away and we're ready.
I feel like certainly unintentionally, but it kind of sets you up for some, you know, to draw additional ire from people who have wanted their kids to go back to school and get in-person learning. Now if you're not starting on the 8th of February, it's your fault.
Right, exactly. And I think that was the difficult part is the day the announcement was made. I mean, I think we mobilized immediately and had letters out to staff and a letter out to parents basically saying, like, we will not be starting school on February 8th. Mm-hmm. And for the reasons that we stated in August, that we needed a three-week, we promised a three-week transition, we needed a three-week transition. The buildings needed to be inspected. There was no way that all of that was going to happen by February 8th. When you look at a district that has one or two buildings, you know, that may have been something that they were able to mobilize. But when you have 42 schools to consider, it took two full weeks for the fire marshal to go through every building, make sure that we had our MERV 13 filters or HEPA filters in classrooms. You know, 6-foot distancing, signage, all of those different pieces. It took two full weeks for them to complete that.
It seems like there was a little bit of a switch in priority in terms of the grades that we wanted to see go back first. And correct me if I'm wrong, but we heard conversations about bringing back younger kids first and then older kids because maybe they were a little more susceptible the older they got to COVID. What can you tell us about that kind of change in strategy?
That's a great question. So initially, when we were asked by the Public Education Department to develop hybrid learning plans, we were only allowed to consider elementary, so K-5. There was no guidance. There was no, that day that everything got released with the governor's office, was the first that we were even allowed to consider middle school and high school. It was always a phase in, starting, like you said, with the early elementary, the younger students, and then working your way up. Like maybe the 2 weeks after, then you'd bring back middle school, and then 2 weeks after high school. So the change and the shift was really twofold. So when we got the order from the school board on February 2nd to increase face-to-face learning beginning on February 22nd, we went back to all of the principals, and we meet with them regularly, 1 to 2 times a week, by level. So all the high school principals kind of work as a team. Mike Montoya is their leader. Middle school, Heather Kingery kind of works with all the middle school, and Tiffany Hensley works with all of the elementary leaders. And so they all got together at each level and said, okay, what is it that we can do? Started with surveying staff to see how much staff we had available, and then looking at the plans, and they each developed their timelines. So if the middle school and elementary thought, yep, we can get it done by the 22nd, we would have been ready and able to do that. But we really felt like, okay, let's start with high school, where we can have a little bit of control, where we look at getting our protocols in place, looking at, doing wellness checks for students. And we just felt like it would be a little bit easier with the high school. And then obviously, we don't want to say that NMAA or sports participation kind of drives the calendar piece. But it was a consideration because we have, 1,500 student athletes, about 400 to 450 at each school. So, for them who have been working hard and practicing and meeting since the very beginning in small pods, really trying to honor their desire to participate. So that was also part of the equation and the variables that we were taking into consideration. So I would say a combination of those led to the high school starting on the 22nd and middle and elementary on the 1st.
All right. It is almost 1:43, and we have Dr. Karen Trujillo, the Las Cruces Public Schools Superintendent, on Voice of the Public today. This is KC Counts. Thank you so much for joining us, whether you are listening on your radio or streaming us at krwg.org or following along on our Facebook page, like Kerwin, who gives us a shout-out from the Philippines. Thank you very much for tuning in, however you do it. There are more ways than ever to get your public media with KRWG, just as there are more ways than ever to get your education with Las Cruces Public Schools. And Dr. Trujillo, I just wanted to ask one more question regarding the younger kids versus the older kids. I think there was a thought, maybe even an assumption along the way, that it would be really hard to get little kids to wear their masks and socially distance and have the hand hygiene that they need. What have we learned about that over the course of the last year?
That's a great question. And I think for myself, going and visiting a school where that was taking place, and I know Mr. Jaramillo is the president of our board, and they've been working with younger children well since the beginning and practicing what all of those protocols are. I have nieces and nephews that are in Albuquerque and go to daycare, and they have that mask mandate there as well. And kids are resilient, and they'll they'll do what is, for the most part, like what's expected of them. And yeah. watching kindergartners in a class with the mask 6 feet apart, they're like, well, okay. I mean, if this is what the normal is, this is what the normal is. It's kind of like that transition going into a classroom and working with the teacher. You know, it's leading by example and having those expectations and doing the best that we can.
I guess if you can teach them to wear pants every day, you can teach them to wear
right?
a mask.
That's right.
Every now and then there will be one that takes them off in the classroom, but it's few and far between.
Well, and really, you know, just setting those expectations, and I think looking at it from a positive standpoint rather than a you're going to be in trouble if you don't do. It's like, okay, let's pull up your mask. Let's mm-hmm. take care of it. And then it just becomes second nature.
Yeah. And what do we know about in the community? So one of the concerns is, of course, it's we know that kids are the least likely to get very sick or develop life-threatening complications from coronavirus. However, we also know that in our community, we have many multi-generational homes. And if everybody at home is vaccinated, obviously, you know, that's ideal. Because we're not even having a conversation yet, are we, about when kids will be able to get vaccinated? So do we have any idea of what those numbers are in our community in terms of how safe it is for the kids' families that are back at home?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, even last night listening to the CDC and that now they're starting to do trials with children ages 5 to 15. So looking forward to that. They're also starting to do trials with pregnant women, which were two groups that were left out of the initial phases. Mm-hmm. I don't anticipate that children will be getting the vaccination maybe even into next fall. What we've asked our families is to say, you know, take all of these things into consideration. If you are in a multi-generational household and grandma is at home or grandpa is the primary caretaker and they are not vaccinated and it's a health risk, take that into consideration as you look at going back hybrid. There's always going to be that option to stay fully remote. In fact, we put out a survey and over 1,000 students are requesting to stay fully online through next year. So it's almost like standing up an entire school, hiring staff who are going to continue to teach fully online. And that's from kindergarten through 12th grade. So, we will have students that will remain fully online, I think, for the foreseeable future. And really having it as an option for students in perpetuity. So I think the community members really need to take all of those things into consideration. So I know the push to get back into school might not be feasible for some for those very reasons until everybody in the household is safe. And really, the health of our folks has got to be the primary concern. It really, really does. I mean, I would hate, you know, my mother-in-law lives with me. She'll be 93 on Wednesday. And she gets her second dose of the vaccine on Thursday. And that is just so comforting to know that she's not going to be in danger.
At this point, do teachers all have the option of coming back in or not?
So, great question. And right now, we are working with staff that are willing to return to the buildings. But, you know, as we move into the next school year, if the school board and the directive from the public education department and as a district we decide, you know, the hybrid model is the acceptable model, then it will be at that point where it is a condition of employment to return to the building. But at this point, we are looking at teachers who are willing to return to in-building learning, and I anticipate that will be the case for the rest of this school year.
At the risk of giving it oxygen, but there's supposed to be a giant spa somewhere where all the teachers have been hanging out for the last year, and you know they don't want to leave the spa and go back to the classroom. Can you just address that?
Thank you for asking that question, and I think we try so hard to... If people knew what all school staff and I hesitate to just say teachers because mm-hmm. it really is the entire school staff. Mm-hmm. We're all educators, and everybody has been working so immensely hard to make this work. You know, if we thought a year ago that we would be teaching fully online, teachers didn't have that training. That was not something that was ever even on the minds of most. And here we are doing it, and doing it well. And we're all working extremely hard. Teachers work all day, every day. EAs are working all day, every day. Our secretaries, our administrators, our janitors, our PPD, our behavioral health specialists, our special teachers, you know, yeah. Everybody is working. It's different, and it will continue to be different, but yeah, there's definitely not a spa, and if there is, I would like to sign up because I haven't had a day off in a very long time.
I can imagine. And based on what you said earlier when John was on the line with us about plans for stretching the school year into the summer, we should probably hold off on making our family Cancun vacation plans then, right?
Well, glad you asked. So even the calendar that we're looking at right now does have the extra 10 days built into it, but it is it does fall between August 1st and May 28th. So it really doesn't look very, very different than what we're used to. It's basically starting a week later in August. And then we were able to kind of fit everything in. That was our goal. If we can get it between August 1st and May 28th, we felt like we were in good shape. K-5 Plus, the way that we are looking at K-5 Plus, the nice thing is that if we extend the school year by 10 days, the summer portion of K-5 Plus is only 3 weeks. And we are able to get that all in July. So the month of June is still pretty free.
Let's talk a little bit about the counseling staff across Las Cruces Public Schools. And, you know, have they been able to take advantage of any kind of, you know, special targeted training for what they might encounter when they have kids back in the classroom?
So our counseling staff, much like our instructional staff, has, you know, been working constantly and consistently. And, you know, when we talk about last week, Amy, you know, the op-ed and the Sunday paper was really looking at loss and treating the social emotional needs of our students, and the idea of, you know, this event for many of our students and staff has been traumatic. We've lost colleagues, students have lost parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents. So really, it is very much dealing with trauma and trauma-informed instruction. And so they have been doing a lot of professional development, not only amongst themselves, but also with our administrators, our instructional staff, of, you know, allowing students to feel, because we can't get beyond those things unless we deal with them when they happen. So a lot of trauma-informed instruction and care will continue to happen, whether we're face-to-face or not. But those are special considerations and something that we take very seriously. And we did before, but now it really has multiplied the need for that trauma-informed instruction.
Dr. Trujillo, we have a Facebook question, and if you want to get in with a question for Dr. Trujillo before our time is through, you better do it quickly because it is 1:53 already. And 646-2212 is the number to call. But Renee is following along on Facebook and asks, if you could clarify, beginning Monday, did we hear you correctly, only A through L alphabet, and Thursday M through Z. Is that correct?
No, so thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. Students that will be going back on this coming week at the high schools, they should have been contacted by their administrator. This is only for students who requested to go back and were willing to commit to the two full days. So if you have not been contacted by your principal, then you're not necessarily scheduled to return. And each high school has a little bit of a different model. So if you have questions about that, I would really, really encourage you to reach out directly to the high school principal.
Okay, Renee, I hope that was... So you would have been contacted by your principal. How did you decide which people to contact and bring back?
So after the board meeting on the 2nd, The high school students and parents were sent a survey and asked to select from three different options. So option one, stay fully online. Option two, stay online, but have access to assistance as needed. So like, hey, I need tutoring in math. I want to go in on 2 hours for 2 hours on Wednesday when it's available, but I don't want to have to commit to two full days a week. And then option three was students who are willing to commit to those two full days a week. So technically that hybrid, right? And so the students that were willing to commit for those two full days a week are those that will be returning on a very consistent basis starting Monday throughout the rest of the year. Those that picked option B that just want that additional support will be receiving that. And again, contact your principal because each school is doing a little bit differently. And then option A are those students that are like, I'm good. You know, I'm online. I've gotten this schedule down. I don't need any more help. Thankfully, as more staff becomes available, those principals will be able to target additional students, you know, seniors that are in need of credit recovery or, you know, that transition piece, or students that just look like, okay, we're on the bubble. You look like you need help. You're not turning in as many assignments as you need to. So hopefully, as more staff becomes available, we'll have more students in that committed 2 day or in option B where they're going in for help as needed.
Let's talk about catching up. A couple of things I want to touch on in just the last few minutes that we have. When do you anticipate, Dr. Trujillo, that you might know, you know, what kind of catching up students are going to need to be doing to get back to up to speed?
Great question. So we have, thankfully, since the beginning of the school year, we do have formative assessments that we've been doing district-wide that have like a beginning of year measure to see, okay, where are you at when you're coming in? And then we did a middle of the year assessment, and then we'll do an end of the year assessment. The difference with the one that we're doing is that it really is formative. In other words, it shows growth. And we look at our own students and where they are. The difference between that and like the end of year state assessment is that we get our data immediately. If we opted out of the state end of year assessment because it wouldn't have given us any information about our students directly, and we chose to use the formative beginning of year, middle of year, end of year model. What we're showing right now is that students very much are showing growth. You know, those that aren't are the ones that we've kind of identified for this initial phase of returning to the building. But by the end of the year, you know, and teachers know like where their students are and where they should be. So they're able to provide that information to the administration. The other thing is that as we build our instructional maps, like we build instructional maps for every grade level. So second grade English in the first 9 weeks should do these following things. And it's all standards based. Mm-hmm. So the other piece is weaving in those possible standards that were not covered this year into the instruction for next year. So that again brings forward that need for those extra 10 days.
And finally, the last question that we'll have time for today is regarding, necessity being the mother of invention, and the things that you've talked about along the way in terms of teachers learning how to handle this situation, and that some of it might stick around. What do you see as being beneficial, and what do you see keeping?
So I definitely see keeping Canvas as a piece of every child's experience moving forward, whether they're fully in the class or not. Opportunities for instruction that, like the direct instruction piece that might happen online, so that when kids are in the classroom, they're able to do more of the hands-on, asking and answering questions, kind of like that flipped classroom idea. I envision students and teachers, especially at the secondary level, saying like, okay, I'm going to have two or three in-person classes and maybe a class or two that's fully online. I see, you know, students that are, you know, rodeo, FFA, athletes that are gone traveling, not losing any instructional time because they will have access to online instruction. I definitely do see a one-to-one initiative with technology for our students, which is not something that we were capable of doing without CARES Act and CARISA mm-hmm. funds. So I see that continuing, and really just a higher level of instructional capacity of our teachers. We've all learned so much, and I think there was a link on our Facebook page and our Twitter page of lessons I learned in 2020, and it was both from students and teachers, and it was just amazing to see that self-reflection of both groups to say, you know, man, last year I couldn't do X, Y, and Z, and now look how much more I'm doing now. So it's awesome.
And if parents have questions about transportation for their kids or anything that we've touched on today, where should they go to find what they need to know?
So obviously always our website, so lcps.net, but honestly, email your principal. Start with your teacher, go to your principal next, check obviously like our Twitter and our Facebook and our website. But if you want questions about your specific child, meal, transportation, that transitioning piece, please, please, please reach out to your principal. That really is the most direct way to get answers.
Dr. Karen Trujillo, Las Cruces Public Schools Superintendent, again, thank you. We are so grateful for your time today and that you were willing to come amidst everything else and answer our questions.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You have a wonderful weekend.
And up next, it's Intermezzo by Request.